Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 4. Brian Hasey, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Got Marty Walsh coming up here, the new executive DA or director of the NHLPA.
Technically an O and I.
I was going to say, this guy's your new top dog. You guys are members of the union, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's lifetime, and we're both vested. O had 800 games. I was eight, same thing, like eight something.
Mm-hmm.
Eight and change. So we're alumni, NHLPA alumni members.
All right. There you go. So this guy's representing your interests.
Love it.
When he comes on, we'll specifically ask about what he can do for you.
Yeah, what's he going to do for retired players?
Yeah.
Yes, more fund. Start up a fund. Retired player fund.
Yes, needs to happen.
They've done some pretty good things for retired, for the alumni, and they've got an emergency fund. They got a lot of good things. I was a player rep for a bit, and
yeah.
I enjoyed it. But, oh, you always tell that famous story, and I was there that day where it was like, it almost turned into a brawl and a fist fight. Was that here? That was here in Toronto, right? During the lockout.
Every guy in the league was in the room. And just some younger guys were like, maybe we should think about a salary cap. And then they were just told to shut up.
What did we do?
We got, it was like, sit down and shut up. I've been doing this too long to listen to your crap. And they were like, okay, thank you. And then it was like, we got a salary cap. It was the most bizarre thing. I'll be honest, I just sat and drank beers and I didn't even know what was going on. I'm like, what the hell am I even doing here? I was just looking to see if I was fatter than everyone else.
Yeah.
There was one guy that showed up that was stunningly huge.
There was a bunch of guys where I'm like, that guy's got me. Like, that guy's really fat.
That's all you need. You need one guy who's in worse shape.
There was a buzz in the room when one guy walked in. Guys were like, holy smokes, he's not making it back this year. If we play, he's not making it back.
He's voting no cap.
Oh, for sure.
he's dying on that hill.
He's voting like done for the season.
Yeah.
For sure.
I will retire if there's a salary cap.
I remember the buzz.
Hayes, you know that my last straw, I was sitting at a pub in Carolina, and I'm like, you better cancel the whole thing, you bastard, because there's no way.
Yeah.
There is no way I can go back.
That is terrifying, isn't it?
You know when somebody walks in and there's just like a hush, like a hole, like, I don't know what it is. Like a celebrity walks in the room and it's just like, oh my God, that's whoever. This guy walked in and people were just dumbfounded as to like, is that who I think it is?
What has this cat been doing with his time off?
A scene. I remember I was sitting with a couple guys from Calgary and Steve Montador, who's passed and was a good friend of mine. And I remember Monty like kicking me under the table going like, look it over there. And it was just a scene.
Just wheeling in for the meeting, boys. Oh, what do we think? Are we voting yes or no? How do we feel about
that?
That
guy was voting no the rest of his life.
Well, I'd be curious. We'll ask Marty this. It's such a weird relationship between, whoever's the head of the NHLPA and Bettman. And Bettman's been on the job for 30 years, and there have been a number of new faces.
Right.
Like, you're talking back in that day, it was Bob Goodnow that was running the ship.
Saskin, there's all these.
Saskin came in. You had Paul Kelly come in. You had Fear for a long time, actually. Donald Fear was running the PA for a long time. And you know the way it goes. When you get towards the CBA, Bettman claims the league is in serious trouble, and we can't survive, and we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
But then when he's in Ottawa, which he was this week, he's saying, man, we're thriving. The league's never been better. We're going to get $1 billion for the Ottawa Senators. Like, how do you possibly juggle that if you're the PA executive director? Because
don't you think you have a PR guy that just takes all those little
Don't you
clips?
Have to clip it?
You just clip
you
it and go, to. You know what, for negotiations. Yeah. And then when you walk
we
in.
We thriving. We yeah. thriving.
We're thriving,
yeah.
man.
You walk in and you play that when you're across the table and Gary Bettman's going, yeah, we're close to a $6 billion business. Okay, let's start. Let's see where we're
let's
at.
Let's hear what
here.
You said when you were in Seattle and they were coming into the league, in Vegas and Ottawa. And because it's always, hey, everything's the best. Never been better. We're flying. We're making money. This team's going to sell. And then the second the CBA's up, we suck. We have nothing, and we're in big trouble.
League struggling.
I may have to fold.
You, if I was Marty Walsh, just clip those things.
Yes.
Gary Bettman says the league has never been better.
Yeah.
$6 billion business. Just use that in your negotiation. Slide that across the table.
In a good place. Yeah, absolutely. Well, here he is, the new NHLPA executive director joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's Marty Walsh. How you doing, Marty?
Hey guys, how are you? And I want to thank you very much for helping me out with the collective bargaining. It's really helpful to have you guys help me.
Yes. Yeah, we'll send the invoice. I don't know who we send that invoice to, but believe me, we will.
We'll figure it out.
Yes, exactly. Well, you got two guys on this show that they're members of the PA. They played in the league for a long time, and I'm curious if you have any, you know, relationship with Gary Bettman. Obviously, it will begin today. But prior to you taking the gig, how familiar are you with Bettman and, you know, kind of what he represents as the commissioner of the league?
Yeah, I met Gary a couple times when I was the mayor of Boston. The NHL dedicated a street hockey rink in the city at one point, and they did a big presentation with the Bruins back then. And then I met him during the Stanley Cup Finals a few years ago in the city. And then last week, you know, my first week, I was able to sit down with Gary and his team for a half hour. We had a good conversation. You know, there's a lot there's a lot that I have to learn moving forward here, and obviously, you know, I'm very new to him, and he's fairly very new to me. So there's a lot we have to learn from each other.
Marty, who do you want to hear from? Obviously, there's a lot of guys in the league, and you can't touch base with all of them, but you want to get together with a few of the prominent players and just get some thoughts and idea of where the general headspace is of some prominent guys, or what's your approach going to be?
Well, actually, my approach is going to be to try and meet every guy in the league. You know, I know I'm coming in at a very busy time, meaning that there's a playoff run going on here. Teams are very caught up in the playoffs, and then the playoffs are going to be starting in a couple weeks here, and obviously, you know, it's going to be tough timing, but I'm going to do, you know, when the search committee, when I met with them, one of the things I said to them was that I intend on getting to know every player in the league. It's, you know, 700 plus players, but a good union leader, a good leader of an organization knows his membership. And I plan on getting to know the players and talking to them, you know, obviously the high profile players as well, but I'm going to talk to them all. And, you know, today I had a press conference and you guys probably saw it, a lot of questions about the collective bargaining agreement. You know, we're a bit away from that. So I have an opportunity to really kind of get a feel for what the players are going to look for long term. You know, when you talk about collective bargaining and you talk about a contract, it is really forward-looking, and it can be locked in anywhere from in this last contract one is going on for a long time, with the exception of having a conversation around COVID and returning back to hockey. So, you know, there's a lot to talk about. Some of these players, they've never gone through good negotiating, collective bargaining, and there'll be a whole group of new players in the league by the time that happens. So I think it's really important for me not to focus on you know, 30 players to set the tone. It really is about having conversation with all the players.
Marty, obviously you're transitioning from, you know, politics and you know, being a union leader into being a union leader of sport. Do you anticipate that being a tough transition, or are you going to use kind of the same philosophy you've always had in your career previous?
No, I think it's the same philosophy. I mean, listen, I think when you're talking about collective bargaining agreement, regardless who you're negotiating for, you could be negotiating for railroad workers, and within that contract, there are many different levels of salary and experience. Office employees, construction workers, police, fire, EMS, hockey players, basketball, whoever it is. I mean, collective bargaining is collective bargaining, and it sets the tone for the workplace for the future, and it is about work and rules and conditions. It's about obviously salary, but it's also about work roles. So, I mean, I think that what I've learned over time, over my years, in all my different roles I've had, there are a lot of similarities, and there are some differences. I mean, I've never negotiated a contract before where there's a salary cap, but I've negotiated contracts where people are looking for raises. So, I mean, there's different pieces of negotiating and bargaining, but at the end of the day, it's the premise of it, collective bargaining, is all the same.
We're chatting with Marty Walsh, the new executive director of the NHLPA, and most recently, you were the Secretary of Labor in the U.S., so working under the President Joe Biden. Now, obviously, you're with the PA. Do you anticipate the players and politicians, is there any similarities there in terms of, you know, getting them on the line, getting them in line, trying to get everyone on the same page, hockey players and politicians?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, everyone has different philosophies and different ideas and different things that are important to them. And sometimes there's differences within organizations. And I think the key to being a strong, effective leader is to be able to take you know, all the different ideas and come up with a consensus so as we go into any type of negotiation or bargaining, that we're on the same page. I think that that's key, and that's why I think, for me, I have the benefit of a couple of years here to be able to kind of, you know, go around, talk to the players and you know, hear everyone's opinion and then to go back and talk to them again about, you know, what are going to be important for us moving forward as an organization. I think that's going to be key. You know, it's, you know, you have different people. And as far as politics, I mean, listen, I come out of the Democratic Party, and when I was the mayor, one of my best buds or closest buds was Governor Baker of Massachusetts. He's a Republican. When I was the Secretary of Labor, I worked pretty well, I think, mostly with people across the aisle. And sometimes you have disagreements with your own side. So, you know, politics is, you know, people view politics that can be described in many different ways. But I think that, you know, what I try to pride myself in is getting to compromise and working across different philosophies.
So if you left a message for Joe Biden to call you back, and then right afterwards you left a message for Connor McDavid to call you back, who do you think you hear from first?
Who do I hear from first? Yeah. Well, it depends. If Connor McDavid has a hockey game or in the middle of a playoff run, I probably hear from the president first. I don't know, but that, you know, I hopefully they both call me back if I call them.
Right, that's a pretty good Rolodex, I would say, with Marty Walsh, the new executive director of the NHLPA. So again, it's early days. You've just been on the job here for a while, but are you picking up on a primary concern? Like, is there one primary objective that you're sensing the players really want you to attack?
No, not yet. I mean, you know, I've been on it literally, it's my second week now, and, you know, the staff at the PA is strong and really committed to the players, and that's half the battle right there when you have an office that's committed to supporting the players. So the players need to know that the people in this office really are about them and their families and their livelihood and working for them. So I think that's a very good start here at the PA. You know, again, when it comes to the players, you know, I think that, you know, I've met with I don't know, a couple dozen players now at this point, minus the search committee and the executive board. And you know, they're curious about me. They don't know who I am, really. They know they Google me, or they know a little bit about me. They know from the executive board members on each team and the player reps telling them about me, but they really don't know who I am or what I'm all about. So, you know, getting to know them is really going to be important. And I've had some really great conversations, and, you know, we haven't dove into anything real deep yet. I mean, different issues have come up in my conversations, but nothing that is like, oh man, we have to work on this right now because I've heard it from 35 different players. That has not come up yet.
You have to park any type of allegiance, given that you've got the Bruins and have had them in your backyard for many years?
That's a question, I guess. When Connor McDavid calls me, I'll have to have that conversation with him.
Yes,
exactly.
You should. Or I would think that's more Matthews and, you know, people in Toronto and Tampa, like the Bruins. Bruins are rolling, man. It's obviously, we're not telling you anything you don't know, Marty.
Yeah, they're rolling. They're playing well, you know, and, you know, obviously, yeah, they're playing well. I'll just leave it right there. I got to remember I'm on a Toronto radio station, not a Boston radio station.
Yeah, be careful here. Be careful.
Exactly. Marty, I wanted to ask you, like, whose radar did you pop up on? Like, did someone just send you a note out of the blue? Like, how were you found? With all due respect to your popularity or whatever you were doing in the past, how did you pop up on someone's radar?
Yeah, I got reached out to by the search firm that was doing the search here. I think they had received my name from somebody, and they reached out to me and asked me if I'd be interested in having a conversation. I said, you know, it's not something that, you know, I'm stealing this line from Governor Baker because he's at the NCAA right now. But if somebody asked me, you know, write down 50 potential careers you want to do, being the executive director of the NHLPA was not one I would have put down. Not that I didn't want it, that I didn't think it was possible. So when they reached out to me, I said, absolutely interested in looking. And then they sent me the job description of what they were looking for. And really, when I saw that, I said to myself, you know, there's everything on this list. Has indirectly or directly have been part of. Now, obviously, I've never represented professional athletes before, but I've dealt with marketing. I've had collective bargaining experience. I've had all those different areas. I've represented union members. I've been involved in arbitrations and all of that other stuff. So it looked on paper, it was for me anyway, looking at it, it seemed like it was a good opportunity and potentially a good fit. And then we started having conversations with the – I started having conversations with the search committee. And, you know, these players were dedicated to this process for a while, for a good bit now. And we had great conversations, and I felt pretty good. And I just kept having conversations with them and talking, you know, one-on-one or with a group of them. And it kind of just took off from there.
So the idea of growing the game is obviously very beneficial for the players because they're getting 50% of the pie. You know, you do the math, the pie continues to grow. There's more money there for all the players. So how much of your time is going to be directed towards that, the idea of growing the game and possibly getting your players and your union to maybe be more engaged in certain areas where even if the players don't want to do it, if it's going to benefit them financially, you know, it's maybe incumbent on you to try to push them in that direction.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I mean, I've had a couple conversations with a couple owners now, and one of them said to me, you know, I'm excited that you have the opportunity to help us with this game and market this game and get involved on kind of on the business side of the game as the player, as the AD of the NHLPA. And I thought that was a great statement by him. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity. I think, these players, you know, they love their sport. They're good at their craft. And I think that anything we can do to expand the game of hockey, you know, in the United States, in Canada, or around the world, is something that we have to be very cognizant of and be very active in. I know that generally, I guess, in the past, there's been roles. The PA has one role. The league has another role. But I think in growing the game, there's a partnership that has to happen. It's not you cover this, we'll take care of that. I think it's absolutely working. In some cases, collectively together to expand the game of hockey.
All right, Marty, we'll get you out of here with a layup. You know, based on your days as the mayor in Boston, you were the mayor for quite a while. Like, how many parades were you a part of, even leading up to your actual, you know, mayor's office? Like, were you a parade guy? Because it's been a pretty good 20 years in Boston.
Yeah, I had five parades in my time as mayor, and I was a third period away from a sixth, so I'll leave it there.
Okay, yes, we can leave it there. He is Marty Walsh, the executive director of the NHLPA, and welcome aboard. Obviously, good luck with the gig, and congrats on it, and thanks for doing this today. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much, guys. Talk to you soon, hopefully.
You got it. There's Marty Walsh joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next Dream Toyota at Maple Toyota, and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's time to Toyota visit MapleToyota.com.
I wonder if he negotiates wicked hot.
Wicked hot?
That's a Bostonian right there, man. That guy's voice right out of the gate.
I love it.
This guy is from Boston. Like, that dude is a Boston guy.
All I think of is Goodwill Hunting. You know, like, that's...
Yeah, the Departed, Goodwill Hunting...
Isn't it one, The Town?
The Town.
That one is...
Town's a really good movie.
Dude, that's a sick flick,
it's
The
a
Town.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's Ben Affleck, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the bank robber, right?
Yeah. The guy... Don't they rob Fenway in that movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they rob Fenway.
That's the last part of the movie.
Jeremy Renner in that, too?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He is.
Didn't Jeremy Renner have, like, a bad accident?
Really
recently?
Bad accident. He
got hit by a snowplow in Nevada somewhere or something, and he was in bad shape.
Really bad shape. I think he, like, saved his niece or something. Like, it was like a plow was driving through, and he grabbed her and got her out of the way, and he got hit and hit pretty badly. Like, he survived. I think they've got an interview coming out with him soon, actually.
Yeah, like, I'm just reading it right now. Like, literally, Jeremy Renner gives first interview since snowplow accident. That was one day ago, so yeah, it's coming out right away.
Yeah. Yeah, he was good in that movie, man. Those are good movies.
Yeah.
Like, Goodwill Hunting, I think, is at the top.
It's actually a phenomenal movie. It's my top five.
Yeah,
sure.
It's a phenomenal movie. But The Departed is that's a Scorsese movie too.
Yeah. Either way.
Can't go wrong.
No.
But yeah, Marty Walsh.
Marty Walsh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's your executive director. He works for you guys now.
I look forward to meeting him. You know, like he seems
guy.
Like in reading a statement from Joe Biden saying he's a tough negotiator and like he's like all business, it seems like. But I like his philosophy. Like instead of going against the NHL, you should be working with them to grow the game. I agree.
That's like, it. Like it's in that. You know, it's too early to know exactly where that goes or what that means, but I look at the All-Star game, the participation by the players. That's just one example. Like, right. maybe if you guys show that you care, maybe it grows more and there's more money there.
Right.
Maybe if, you know, if you're willing to be mic'd up more, if you're like, there's different elements that I'm sure are difficult conversations. And a bunch of guys will just simply say, no, I'm not doing it. And you right. got to, there's nothing Marty can do. He works for the players. Mm-hmm. But if you can find some of them that say yes, and it just opens different avenues, I think that's a good sign.
You know what it is, though? You've got to get the right ones to say yes. Like, you've got to get the star power yes. on board.
Yeah, because you need the Rory McIlroy to say, these guys are getting soft. Like, they got to just show up for these amount of events. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. get serious.
You need the big boys.
But if you have the big boys on your side, everyone else falls into line because they're going, that guy, you know, Connor McDavid coming out, I believe it was him saying, like, I don't mind overtime being a little bit longer. Or was it Sid? One of the two recently said, extend overtime. They're the guys who have to play it, mm-hmm. not the backup goalies or the seventh defensemen. So those are the guys who have to absorb some of the workload.
Well, even that is an interesting part of the conversation that isn't necessarily about growing the game. It can be, for sure, though, is the rules, is the playoff structure. Like, there's been a lot of guys, Brad Marchand just came out recently and said it's bogus, that basically he spoke on behalf of Boston, Toronto, and Tampa. He said three of the best teams in the league, and only you know, one of them's going home in 10
first
days.
Round, yeah. Yeah,
and right. Sid said that, and there's been a number of guys who have said that.
Yeah, so take action. Look into
exactly.
it. But they keep saying, oh, Gary said last week or 10 days ago, he was like, everyone loves the format. It's highly successful.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is garbage. You're just ignoring.
Yeah,
it's ignoring.
Absolutely untrue. It is completely bogus, and Bettman knows it. It's just Bettman's stubborn and doesn't want to change it.
Or there is other owners or whatever. Like,
well, he's probably saying the owners love it. That's a good point.
Right,
but like if Sidney Crosby says he doesn't like it, you cannot claim that everyone's on board with it.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah, players and owners and stuff look at it, owners look at things different than players, but you still have to listen to the guys who sell your product.
I still have not had anyone detail how this new playoff format has actually led to anything of significance. In terms of a rivalry or in terms of creating buzz or a
narrative.
Dude,
I'm not even going to give you a half-ass answer because it just hasn't done that. So it's nonsense.
No,
so stop it.
I haven't seen, and I understand there are people that advocate for it. Johnny is one that does. We'll have MJ on later in the week. Maybe we can bring it up. But how has this format been such a rock-solid format to the point where people really, there was a payoff? And it's not even that the 1-8, 2-7 had necessarily a massive payoff either, but the whole idea of changing it is because you believe it's for the better. How is it actually better? I don't think Bettman can give you that.
Well, I don't know if they have. How would you even prove that it's better or worse? Like, that's the difference. Like, if you went back and said, okay, well, you know, 1-8, it, like, in this market, people want that because of where the Leafs are at. But how do you prove it's better or worse, to your point? Like, there's no analytics. Can they point to Gates and say, well, you know, these markets made it because of it, and that's helped grow the game? Like,
I don't know
if there's analytics to support it.
I doubt it.
Right? It might just be hearsay.
Change for the sake of change, and you're going to stick with it because you've done it.
Right.
Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider, just after 6 o'clock. Mike Florio in about an hour. Mike, with some reporting on where the Packers are at with the Jets and how Green Bay might be willing to come off the first-round pick ask and demand, if you want to call it that. But what does that mean? If it's not a first-round pick, how many picks can the Packers expect to get in return for Rodgers? So there's a lot to get into with Florio, including the Heat picking up on Belichick. We didn't ask Marty about that.
Right.
Nor would you expect a clear-cut answer on it. But I was watching ESPN this morning, like, every day it's like Belichick, Belichick, Belichick. This, and there are some people getting bold with Bill Belichick.
Making comments?
Well, basically, hey, look at him. He's lost it. He lost his fastball. He can't do it anymore.
Come on. Look at the quarterback. There's the first place you can look.
That's absolutely true. But maybe
he's got to go get one.
But you can't just use that excuse. It's on him to get it.
Right.
Exactly. And if you're the greatest coach of all time, which I still contend that he is, then you can find a way to work with almost any quarterback.
I think it's all nonsense, Brian. I think it's just, it's like 2 years, and it's like now all of a sudden his methods and tactics are coming into question. I think it's garbage.
Well, I do think there's a lot of people that don't like Bill Belichick, and now this is your chance to,
jealous.
Jump on him. Absolutely. And former players that don't like him because, you know, guys that get cut, guys that lost to him a lot, for sure. But they did miss the playoffs last year. He did have a gong show on his staff. He had Joe Judge and Matt Patricia as like co-offensive coordinators, and it was a disaster.
Right.
There are certain things that he
needs to solidify. On Bill.
Absolutely, that's on Bill. And it's not a good look for Bill Belichick. So Florio will join us in about an hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Thanks again to Marty Walsh, the former mayor of Boston, now the executive director of the PA, and obviously of Irish descent. And speaking of which, I'm looking at the leaderboard of the Valero Texas Open, and there's Paddy Harrington.
Wow.
What?
4 under. Padraig Harrington is sharing the lead with your boy, Matt Kuchar.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
I'm not
Kuch
kidding you.
With those hairy legs is getting it done.
Kuch is out there hacking and whacking and finding a way to get the ball in the hole, and he's 4 under. He's currently in the lead with Paddy Harrington.
I need that little pot belly wheeling around Augusta National again.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And
if they win this tournament, they go, right?
Absolutely. This is your last chance. This is your last ticket. You win this, you're going. And Matt Wallace, who won last week, I don't know if that counted as a chance to go to Augusta, though.
I don't think so either. It was like a secondary tournament.
Yeah, it wasn't. But he's at 3 under, and our boy Nick Taylor's at 3 under, too. So the Canadian content is sitting there atop the leaderboard. And, yeah, I think Nick needs that to punch a ticket as well. But there you go. So we'll track that.
I just think it's funny that you think he has hairy legs.
Like, he wears these weird corduroy pants that are too short, and they're bell bottoms. Hayes, you got to admit his gear.
Yeah,
I mean, if we were to name a top five outrageous gear on tour, he's in there.
I think Kuchar's on it. Matsuyama's on it. Hovland is on it.
Chuck Hoffman with the shiny silver bell-bottom dress pants and the tight white undershirt long sleeve under the waist management
and
golf
then
shirt.
We know who the fifth is, obviously Brian Harman. That's your number five, is your boy Brian Harman. There's your five-pack.
He is not the top five. And you were floored by that.
I was. It was.
You were. You were like, this guy, you text me and said, look on TV, Harmon's got black pants and a brown belt on. And it was not text worthy, but it drove you nuts.
It did. Although I will say the belt can determine your ranking. Sung Jae-im holding on to the white belt, black pant.
Dude,
he's the only guy on tour
that still does
it.
White belt on tour went out 10 years ago, man.
Yeah, it. Honestly,
the move now is beige pants, beige belt. Blue pants, blue belt.
Yes.
Stop throwing that white belt on there. It's insane.
Yeah, but that's his look, man. You can see it. Like, we'll be live at the Masters, and they'll be showing shots of the range, and you'll be able to pick out Sung Jae-im because he'll be the only guy with a white belt on black pants.
He should do a board when he's down there of guys like and their gear.
Yes.
And a rating system.
Listen, absolutely. I mean,
maybe we can do that.
We can do that if we need to. We should break it down based on, you know, how we feel. Listen, Ricky Fowler used to have the loudest, most like bombastic gear, and he's even dialed it back a little bit, but he's still a bit wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of golf, I want to give a shout out to Monet Chun, who's the first Canadian woman to qualify for the finals of the Augusta National Women's Amateur today. Mm-hmm. Just saw that through 36 holes. She's T6. So she's playing Augusta on Saturday. That's awesome.
Something happened at that women's AM in Augusta yesterday that was so bizarre, and I have no idea how it happened. The winner from last year,
Anna Davis, your girl
Anna
with the bucket
Davis,
hat.
The bucket hat legend. On the first hole, it was lift clean in place, and she was in the rough and grabbed her golf ball and cleaned it and placed it. And she did it twice on the same hole and got two shots each.
Right. She had a
four-shot penalty at the end of the round. But I'm thinking to myself, didn't one of her playing partners say, what are you doing? And why didn't her caddy say, what are you doing?
Yes, that's the one, is the caddy. The playing partners may not be paying attention. They're young.
Right.
It's an amateur event. But I think the caddy not having the understanding of what the rules are.
Like, come on, man. You're in the rough. Who Lift, Clean, and Place has been in the fairway only forever.
Forever. It's not. You cannot have it unless it's ground under repair, which is not the same as Lift, Clean, and Place.
Dude, I just saw it yesterday, and I'm like, how in the hell does that happen?
She
like,
went. She scored it. A five. She carded a five on the hole. Now it's a nine. She woke up this morning, and it was a nine. That is that's not ideal. So speaking of not being ideal, we're well aware of what's happening with the Winnipeg Jets right now. You guys see Mark Scheifele is on the right wing.
Oh,
Scheifele at practice today, right wing. Of course, the media said, hey, you think you could send Mark out? Declined, which I don't think is in his best interest. He should get out, just talk about it, own it. He hasn't played well. He's been awful at times. They've all been awful. There's a reason the Jets have been a mess.
His last 10 games, he's got zero goals. The guy's got 38 goals. He's having a career season.
Right.
He's got zero in his last 10. They're 1-for-30 in their last... Frankie and I were talking about it earlier. 1-for-30 in their last 8 games in the power play.
That's wild, man.
Like, that's a team that's got a 40-goal scorer in Connor. Scheifele's going to have 40 goals this year. Like, you've got... guys that can find the back of that.
And you remember how dialed in their offense was early on? Like, they had that kid from Whitby, that left-handed shot, the first-round pick. He was wheeling and dealing and making things happen. And I don't know. It's just, it's all, and we talked about it yesterday, guys. There was some nonsense going on last year where somebody hated somebody, and it was all rosy at the beginning of the season. And I'm a firm believer that whatever nonsense was going on last year has crept back in there and it's happening again.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking Perfetti, right?
Yeah, Perfetti's the guy. Cole Perfetti. I agree with you, and I think this is not the equivalent of taking the captaincy off a guy. It's nowhere close to that. But Scheifele, you know, is going to have a lip on now because he's a center, and he's probably looking at it and saying, why am I the guy? Like, have someone else move.
But you're...
I'm actually shocked that he agreed to it. Like, somebody would have had to went to him and said, do you want to play wing? And
I don't think
like,
you have
this,
to.
Like, what is this, the World Cup where he's on the under-24 team again?
I don't... I think it's a scenario where you go, you haven't been playing very well. Like, to me, and I've said this, and I know MJ, you know, I got him to admit the other day, I was joking about it, you weren't on the show, I think, where I was like, admit to me, the easiest position in hockey... or to hide somebody defensively is on the wing.
Yeah.
And
no doubt.
This guy, if there's whispers where the coach comes out the other day and says, if my team thinks they're giving it their all, they're sorely mistaken. I'm paraphrasing. And they put Scheifele on the wing. It says to me that your number one center is not getting his ass back into his own zone and defending properly. So put him on the wing. That to me, that'll free him up. Where you can maybe stretch the zone, you can get a couple different looks.
Absolutely.
I don't have a problem with that. You've got Connor,
so
Dubois.
Who the hell's playing center with him?
Well, Dubois. They moved Dubois into the center ice position there, and Connor on the left wing, and you've got Wheeler. I still think Wheeler he's on the back nine for sure.
They have Nemestikov playing center.
Nemestikov, they moved up into the middle.
But that takes away from the whole idea of having Mark Scheifele and Pierre-Luc Dubois on the same team. It's like one's going after the other, and you're going to create all kinds of problems for the next...
I agree.
I don't know. And I obviously that you put stars together... But they got one last shot. Let's be honest. Does anyone think that this group is going to be together next year when that team goes to training camp? I don't.
No. There's no chance. Even
so,
if they
it's like, guys, go for some beers or something and say, let's get it together because this is our last crack at it. A bunch of us probably won't be here. And when I say a bunch, I don't know the amount, but it's like, let's do this the right way and go out with a bang because this is nonsense. So if you want to be here, you don't want to be here, just put it together for a couple months here and see what we can do. And then do your thing. Whatever you got to do, you got to do.
I can get behind it. I think, obviously, this is a scenario where you got a head coach who's desperate because he's trying to push buttons. I'm talking more about Scheifele. Where
he's too good a player, Hayes, to be even involved in these conversations.
Yeah, and he's put himself in that place. Like, clearly, he's put himself in that place.
Right.
But you guys know egos in the room. This is a long-standing Jet, man. He's been there a long time. He's got 38.
Right.
And, like, it's... kind of like the Tavares situation, but that was a scenario where it was O'Reilly was coming in. the Leafs were a juggernaut. I'm sure it was easier to try to kind of get Tavares on board with it.
Well, this isn't a negative. Like
this
the
is
Toronto
like,
thing wasn't a negative thing.
No,
this is a negative thing.
This
because,
is a we're a mess. We got to do something.
But, yeah, and the coach has an obligation to try to get people's attention, and he might have said to himself, "Mark Scheifele's an established player. He's one of the better players in the National Hockey League. How am I going to get his attention?" And maybe this just pisses him off so much that it gets his attention.
Yeah.
And that's what the coach is supposed to do, because you're supposed to get guys' attention to make them play better. And hopefully this will piss him off enough where he says, you know what, Rick? I'm going to shove it you know where, and I'm going to show you that I deserve to be playing center ice. And guess what? That's exactly what Ricky Boy's wanting. So yeah. that's what the goal here is.
I agree. I you have to do something. You can't just sit there and go, okay, like eventually it's going to come out. You have to start shuffling the deck. You have to start pressing buttons. And Rick Bowness is at a stage of his career. Was it Dregs? Like, he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
67 years old or whatever.
Yeah, he's not
trying to protect feelings and go, you know what? Like, I got to worry about my tenure here in Winnipeg. You know, he's a guy that, by all accounts, was fine with retiring, signs in Winnipeg, and goes, I'm not going to pull any punches here. This is what I see. I'm going to be honest, and I'd like to get my group going here, and they've got 7-8 games left. See if you can get going. And ultimately, those guys have to deliver. Bonus isn't putting the gear on. So if he sees that Shifley's not getting it done as a centerman, put him on a wing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is practice today.
It may
don't play till tomorrow.
By game time tomorrow
right?
night. Yes.
Maybe the effect was he just wanted to walk in the locker room and see 55 on the right wing, and then it was like, piss him off a little bit, and right before game time tomorrow, right before warm up, take an eraser and wipe it off, say, there you go. I hope you're okay.
Or play him on the wing and see if he can get his game in order.
That could be the case, too, right? Yeah.
Listen,
if you're one of the best team in the league, if you're the worst team in the league, like look at the examples here of three Canadian teams where we saw it recently with Jonathan Drouin, the Habs. They're the worst team in the country. You screw up, still going to be a message. Even though you're awful, you know, Marty St. Louis felt it was important to send a message to Drouin that filters through the rest of the team. If you're late for a meeting or whatever, it's not acceptable. Here you got Winnipeg, who's right in the middle. They're barely hanging on for a playoff spot, making drastic changes and trying to poke and prod. Then with the Leafs, you got Morgan Rielly playing with Luke Shen. You got Michael Bunting moving up and down the lineup. Like, the Leafs are going to the playoffs, and they're in a really good position. And Keefe is still in a position where he feels like he's got to poke and prod. Like, it never stops. It doesn't matter. Like, I would guess Jim Montgomery's in Boston's got a few things that he's looking at saying that's a concern.
Sure.
Which seems impossible because Boston has been untouchable all year.
But
that's the nature of coaching in pro sports.
And there's going to be healthy competition. Boston's rolling along. I don't know, Taylor Hall might be available to them, right? So all of a sudden, Taylor Hall's taking somebody out that's played probably pretty darn well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Foligno's not far behind him. My understanding is that both of those guys, or one of them, might be available to them sooner than later.
Right.
Again,
certainly by the playoffs.
Depends on who you talk to in Boston. There's
maybe Marty Walsh can give you an answer.
Montgomery came out the other day. It was like, that's fake news. Like, there was a report about Taylor Hall. Like, so I don't know what's going on, but either way, they're going to have one or two potential real good additions closer to the playoffs.
Well, there's a conundrum. It's a good one, but still, the coach has got to figure out how it all, you know, shakes out.
And, exactly.
You know, as for the Leafs, it continues with the 11-7, and then it's 12-6, and you're going to get O'Rielly back. You're going to get Achari back. Not likely this weekend. Achari could return, but by next week, you're going to put Achari in, and you're certainly putting O'Rielly in. So that's coming. You know, we're going to have a better idea of what Keefe has in mind once these guys get back into the lineup, and how everything shakes out and where guys go. And I think, again, Bunting is an interesting spot because if they go back to O'Rielly on the second line with Tavares on the left wing, what does that leave for Bunting?
Third line.
Probably third line. Like, I think they're pretty set on Yarncroke playing up the lineup ahead of him right now. I think Kerfoot's got a stronger grip on that position than Bunting does right now.
So you're thinking fourth
he's not going on the fourth line. I don't see him on the fourth line, but
I think that would be foolish, to be honest with you.
I think Bunting would be a third. Like, he's, for me, he's a third line guy who's been, you know, elevated because of his situation and what he brings to those other two. Like, it's no secret. You put Marner back with Matthews, and guess what happens? The guy starts scoring.
Matthews,
like,
is
we haven't
on fire
even really
again.
Pointed that out. Like, it's like
he's hitting 40 now on the season. He scored last night. He's
but I mean, like, that's all because Marner's back there with him.
Yeah. Well, the feed last night is a great example.
I'm a supporter of the guy, Jamie. Like, I know that there's been ups and downs for Bunting this season. He's had it out with the coach. He's had it out with the refs. I'm telling you, though, man, it gets greasy in the playoffs, and you need somebody to go in the corner and get the puck, and he doesn't mind doing that. I don't know. He just, for a team that's kind of quiet and not a lot of rambunctiousness, and I know he has to channel it and do a lot of things differently or better, I think he can be valuable helping those players out. Mm-hmm. And I want him to get it together because I'm – for a team that's quiet and a quiet bench and kind of a quiet disposition for a lot of the players, he's got energy and he works his ass off and he's got some. He's a physical player.
Yeah.
But it's got to be channeled properly, and I think he can be really valuable. Well, so I hope he gets it back on track before game one.
I would argue, and I'll ask both of you this question. I think Sheldon would talk to 34 and 16 and go, who do you want to play with?
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course.
I mean, those guys have input. Like, they have input of who they feel comfortable with. And keep in mind, this is a 10-day stretch here. This isn't, you know, what do you want to play with for the next 2 months? It's like their priority is against the Tampa Bay Lightning for 10, 12 days, however long that lasts. It's not about making sure everyone's feelings are good and all that. It's like,
right.
Who are you going to produce?
Hyper-focused.
You want that guy or that guy?
Well, that's it. That's what we're saying, right? Like, in Bonus in Winnipeg, he doesn't care about feelings. And
that's
Keith,
what I'm saying. Yeah.
Keith can't and Keith won't hear because there are guys like Bunting, like Timothy Liljegren's had a really good year, hasn't been playing well enough. So he's probably on the outside looking in. That's probably a tough pill to swallow. Sorry, it's the playoffs. Like, it's going to have to happen. Be ready because when you go in, you better produce.
Yeah.
But I agree with you in terms of Matthews and Marner having somewhat of a say. I heard them talking about this on the lunch earlier this week, like how you define Bunting, because is he physical or is he agitating? Like, there's a difference there. Like,
I think it's basically under the same umbrella, right? You're right, though. He's not squashing guys.
He's not physical necessarily.
No, he's not heavy enough to be fit. Like, he's a slight guy. Like, he's not, you know, 6'2".
Yeah, he's not imposing. Like, I'm nervous. This guy's dumping the puck in my corner.
He's not shy to be physical. Like, he's not shy to give hits and absorb hits. Like, he's involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's certainly involved in it and in the dirty areas.
Right, which is worth a lot, which
right.
is very valuable. And it becomes even more valuable in the playoffs. You know, the ice will shrink, and there's more battles, and you got to win battles.
Right.
You have to have it. Pierre LeBrun in about 20 minutes. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, in about 45. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
I love the great city of Toronto. Just hearing Nathan Downer there in the break, it's like, there'll be a new thing you can drink in parks. Oh, great. How does that even come to anyone's attention? You can drink in parks now. Like, how is that on somebody's plate with all the garbage going on?
Yeah.
You can drink in parks?
It's been around forever because it happens in a lot of other cities around the world.
Dude, people drink in parks anyway, Hazy. You know that. You used to do it.
Yeah, I remember, like, in Montreal, I believe it's legal. I know in London, England, like, that's what people do. They walk around booze all the time. People are on the tube drinking beers in London.
I didn't know it was illegal, like, up until now.
It is illegal here. I don't know if they're actually policing it, though. That's the thing.
Dude, if people are lying down, what's that park with the big hill on it near the Danforth? Like, people bring a towel, they bring booze, and they hang out.
Yes. I'm not hanging out in parks much these days unless I have my kids. So this has nothing to do with anything that's going to happen in my life.
So it would raise an eyebrow if I said you want to meet at the park for some beers?
Yes, it would. Absolutely. I think this is an age limit thing, isn't it? Like, this is basically if you're 30 and under and you're living downtown or anywhere else and you just want to hang out and have some drinks, fine. But who's 50 years old saying, hey, Bill, Gary, Rick, let's meet down at Trinity Bellwoods, set up shop,
and
have some wine. Like, nobody's doing that.
Dude, I'll tell you, nobody's the telltale that. Sign that you're old is when you get an invite or to be a part of something, and it's like, let's meet up at 10:30 at, and it's like, 10:30?
Yeah.
I'm in bed.
Yeah. a.m.? Yeah. Like, what are you
to
talking about?
To go out at that time? What the hell time are you getting home if you're going out at 10:30?
Yeah, 10:30 is a big night. Noodles, you're still living the life. Like, you're a night hawk.
I stay up late, yes, but I'm not out and about.
I would accept those plans. I wouldn't activate those plans, right? Like, if that's the way it goes, because I'm going through it right now. I got a chain going with a bunch of my buddies. We're all turning 40. And one guy threw out, like, well, maybe when you get the kids down, then we'll all meet out afterwards.
Right.
And the reaction was, like, are you nuts? Like, if on a Thursday, we're not going downtown at 9 p.m. Like, we'll meet, you know.
Oh, it would be fine. Meet up at 10. You can get, you know, you can go to a place somewhere, Spadina, like these after hours. You knock on a door and you're in a barber shop or something.
It's pathetic, though. It is pathetic that the reaction is, like, I don't know, man. That's asking a lot. Like, how... Yeah. Could we possibly? It is sad. It is a sad state. It's a sad state.
Yeah.
But yeah, drinking in parks. Yeah. Listen, we have no mayor. So who's tabling this stuff?
Right.
Chaos right now. Who isn't running for mayor? That's what I want to know. Every day there's someone else on CP24 in the morning.
Is there anybody good though? I see all these.
I don't know.
This guy's a former columnist for this. Then you're like, oh my god, like, is that guy going to be the mayor?
People are running. It's a great question. I honestly don't know who is. Who's in the lead right now, or who is expected to win? But
exactly.
Final hour coming up. Pierre LeBrun will join us. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.